what is it good for? You're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut, streaming live at WPKN.org. The name of this program is In Context, where we take an in-depth look at public affairs stories. I'm here with my co-host, Gus Contivero.
Hello.
In a democracy, public policy is supposed to be made in the open so that we can all witness it, because democracy is about the consent of the people, the informed consent of the people. So we give our consent to what the government does, and that ratifies it as legal. But not all public policy is made in the open as it should be. A lot of it is done secretively by private groups. And tonight we're going to talk about one of the most important groups. The Bilderberg Group meets almost annually since 1954. And who are these people and what do they talk about, Gus?
Well, the Bilderberg Group is a group of the world's banking elite, the private corporation elite, the heads of state, royalty, the heads of media. You know, it is represented by every aspect of our culture and our world governments. What makes it so important is that people don't quite realize that when you have public policy being discussed, debated, agreed upon, that it needs to be reported in the media. And most democracies around the world have rules on the books that prohibit their heads of state from meeting secretly to discuss those types of things. And here in the United States, we have a law on the books and has been for quite a long time called the Logan Act. And the Logan Act exists for the purpose of making it illegal for private citizens or members of government to meet secretly without being on official business of the United States government to discuss and negotiate and agree upon agreements with foreign governments. Because, well, can't you imagine just how complicated that could make things if you have members of your government secretly meeting with a foreign government
to try to
influence public policy?
So how did this organization come into being in 1954?
Well, it came into being by a number of shady characters, and the name of the group, the Bilderberg Group, was named after the first hotel that they met in. What was it, the Hotel van der Bilderberg, I think it was called?
The Hotel de Bilderberg is near Arnhem in the Netherlands, and the first meeting was from 29th May to 31 May 1954. And although the meetings are very secretive over the years, listeners should understand that people who are determined investigators, journalists like Jim Tucker, penetrate the meetings. It's one way or the other through cooperative hotel staff members, and they eventually are able to put together agenda for the meeting and guest lists.
Right, and specifically about the Logan Act, you know, some of the notable attendees who have attended the Bilderberg Group are people like Texas Governor Rick Perry, who is about to enter the fray of the trying to get the Republican presidential nominee. In the past, recent past, we've had people like Senator John Kerry, Senator John Edwards, Senator John McCain. All of these are presidential candidates.
Sure.
Recently, Vice President Al Gore attended, Richard Holbrooke, Senator George Mitchell, Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson, Colin Powell, Paul Volcker, Senator Chris Dodd, Peter Jennings, a member of the media.
And these guys, when talking about the elected political leaders and the media people, essentially they're getting instructions from the top bankers and industrialists. A perennial presence at these meetings is David Rockefeller, whose family really goes back to the origins, not only the Bilderberg Group, but previous groups, other groups like the Council on Foreign Relations,
right,
which have been very influential.
The Trilateral Commission.
The Trilateral Commission was founded by Rockefeller in 1973.
And Rockefeller himself is a key cornerstone of Chase Manhattan Bank.
Of course. So they Rockefellers and the Rothschilds are probably the two most important players in this. You want to call it a secret? I call it a secret government. Essentially, that's what it is. Now, I don't want to overstate the case. They don't say at these meetings, we're going to do X, and necessarily that's what every country does. really, I think the approach is that they want to discuss important common interests and try to reach a consensus. So when people leave the meetings, they know what the game plan is. I think a good example was back in the early 70s, they had a meeting that had to do with the coming oil crisis.
Right.
It was 5 months before the 1973 Arab-Israeli war, which led to OPEC dramatically raising oil prices. Now, the context for the 1973 Bilderberg meeting was that the oil companies had for some time been pushing for higher oil prices. Because naturally, higher price of oil, they're going to make a lot more money at 10% of $100 a barrel than $5 a barrel.
Look what's happened recently, just in the past few years. You know,
sure,
when we had the lie of peak
up.
Oil, it jacks up like crazy. The speculators make a ton of money. And on top of that, you know, even with catastrophes like the Gulf oil spill, all that oil that was wasted and the negative press that was given on BP, you know, all the oil companies, record profits, tens of billions of dollars, and they still get subsidies
of course,
do business so that they don't have to pay tax
on. And at this 1973 meeting was attended by the top oil companies. And they came to a secret agreement, again, not covered in the corporate media.
Oil again, Rockefeller, Standard Oil.
The Rockefellers and the other oil companies were there, CEOs of Royal Dutch Shell, British Petroleum, French Oil Company, Exxon. And so they said, look, here an opportunity is coming up for us to jack up oil prices. So the public leaders, well, Nixon, for example, was opposed to these increases in oil prices. They said, this can work for us. So it was a meeting that was significantly attended by Henry Kissinger, who was President Nixon's National Security Council advisor. He became Secretary of State. And Kissinger was on board with the oil increase. And guess what? Kissinger, like Brzezinski, worked with the Rockefellers. Kissinger's career was intimately connected to the Rockefeller family. So after the meeting, Kissinger goes to the various oil producers and say, look, we can live with big increases in your oil prices. Of course, he's speaking for the bankers. He's not speaking for you and me.
Oh, of course not. No.
And then he says the only condition is you have to recycle these petrodollars through British and American banks. You do that, and everything will be hunky dory.
Yeah, no problem.
So the money, the prices went up tremendously. The U.S. goes in, and the West goes in this huge recession, and the money just goes flowing into the banks. And then what did they do with it? They relent this money. They lent this money to places like Argentina to do what? To buy imported oil at inflated prices. And so this set up the whole bankruptcy and the neocolonialism that has entrapped so many countries in the 80s. And it was all decided at a Bilderberg Group meeting.
Right. Now, I want to lay some names on you here. I already did name a few people who are politicians past and present. You know, people like George Soros, very influential in these meetings. But I want to show you historically how the Bilderberg Group is basically a kingmaker group and where the significance of this group is. You know, recently in the past, we've had around the world, internationally, people like Paul Martin and Stephen Harper. Both are former and present prime ministers of Canada. Then we've had Tony Blair, who attended the Bilderberg meeting and then became Prime Minister of England. We've had Bill Clinton attend the Bilderberg meeting, when he was a little-known governor of Arkansas. And then in 1991, he attended, and then wins the election very shortly thereafter. So you have the heads of state, you have the heads of the world, the heads of private industry, who we know will put their money and their influence behind the media machines to get someone elected if they feel that they can benefit from it. So if you go to this meeting and you pander to the private corporations, they will decide you're one of the chosen few who are going to run against our other puppet. So would you have a sham election like Obama and McCain? They're both Bilderberg attendees because you had Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton both attended the 2008 meeting, which was in Chantilly, Virginia. And you may remember this, listeners out there, they both disappeared for a weekend and no one knew where they were. And Barack Obama's airplane took off with all of the media who were on his detail on board the airplane. And he was not present. They were told that he was about to arrive and they were all waiting to depart. he didn't arrive. They took off. And finally, his spokesperson had to say, look, he had to attend to some private business. We, you know, we'd rather you not know where he is right now. He'll join us in our destination. And the same thing happened with Hillary Clinton. And her people said they didn't know where she was. But when Jim Tucker confronted them and said, I know she's at the Bilderberg meeting, they said, no, she's not. And he said, well, listen, I'm going to run the story whether you say you know where she is or not. I'm just going to say you didn't know she was there. And they, he said, you got 20 minutes. They called him back and said, yeah, okay, she was there. We knew it.
So if you want to be anointed as a candidate, you have to be vetted by the Bilderberg group.
That's exactly right. And that's why someone like Ron Paul is so dangerous to them, because he won't bend over backwards for people like this.
Well, Ron Paul understands that the Federal Reserve is part of this cartel
exactly.
of private banks that's running our government.
Which is cornerstone to their world domination.
Of course. It's really through banking. There's a famous quote from, I think it's Meyer Rothschild, the founder of the Rothschild dynasty.
Right.
He says, it's really secondary who makes the loss. He says, if you give me control of the money system, I'll essentially run everything.
Exactly.
That's paraphrasing him.
Right. I care not who makes the laws. Give me control of the money system and I'll rule the world or something.
And
that
really,
effect.
That's what we see happening now with one of the important items on the agenda, I'm sure, at the Bilderberg meeting that was held June the 8th through 12th in St. Moritz, Switzerland.
Of 2011.
Yeah. Was what's going to happen with this financial crisis. Now, to you and me, the financial crisis is a source of, is an economic calamity, because it's bringing high unemployment.
Right.
Wages in many cases are falling. People are losing their houses. But to the world's private central bankers, this is actually an opportunity.
Oh, this is a gold rush. Because when you have people who are out of work, they're panicking. You've got incredible debt that's just through the roof, where everyone is having to have a fire sale in order to make up the losses, which, as we all know, because of the derivatives market, is impossible. Even if you sold the entire planet, you wouldn't be able to cover the losses that was incurred from the derivative scandal. And this is why this is just so key. Listeners out there, you have to understand this. If you want to know what's going to happen, look at the representatives of the people attending the Bilderberg meeting. And before I get to...
Do you have the names of some of the people
that attended this list, St. Moritz, Switzerland,
and
yeah, the list is so long, but I narrowed it down to some of the most recognizable names, because most of the people I don't recognize, you know, because they're vice presidents of corporations and, you know, hedge funds and things like that, so I don't really know who they are, but... I narrowed this down, and internationally, then I'll get to the national list. You have from China, the Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs. From Germany, you have Joseph Ackermann. He's the chairman of the management board of Deutsche Bank. You have Peer Steinbrück, who is a member of the Bundestag and former minister of finance. From Finland, you have chairman of Royal Dutch Shell. From Belgium, the National Bank of Belgium. You have Etienne Davignon, the minister of state. From Spain, and as one of the very key countries here, because they are possibly next.
After Greece.
From Spain, you have Bernardino León Gross, who is the Secretary General of the Spanish Presidency. That's pretty high.
You're getting the key people from business.
From Turkey, you have the former Minister of State. From France, Thierry de Montbrial, who's the French Institute of International Relations. From Great Britain, you have the chairman of Barclays. You have chairman of HSBC, a member of the House of Lords, deputy chairman of Royal Dutch Shell. That's Richard Lambert. Peter Mandelson, House of Lords chairman, Global Council. Editor-in-chief of The Economist, John Micklethwaite. And Rory Stewart, who's the member of parliament.
And of course, we have the World Bank. The president of the World Bank is there, Robert Zoellick,
right?
The former president of the World Bank, James Wolfenson, Bill Gates of Microsoft. It's a who's who of anybody who's important in business. And then you have the academics like Henry Kissinger, who are there to make sure that policy is implemented in accord with their decisions.
Right. And also being representative from the rest of the so-called pigs countries, you have Portugal, you have a former prime minister there. And from Greece, you have George A. David, who's the chairman of Coca-Cola, HBC, and chief economist and head researcher from Eurobank, EFG, and the minister of finance, George Papakanstanou. And from Ireland, you have two representatives, one from Goldman Sachs International and the former deputy prime minister.
So what were they talking about?
Well, they want to talk about how to counter the the uprisings, the popular uprisings, how to counter the effects of the internet, how to control the flow of information.
One of the, I think, the issues that they're concerned about is the kill switch for the internet. Could you talk about that?
And in fact, who else but it was Jay Rockefeller, who the word is, he is going to be the future leader of the Bilderberg Group once David Rockefeller, who's now 97
years
old.
This is a senator from West
Senator
Virginia.
Senator Jay Rockefeller, once David Rockefeller.
And he's 96.
Passes on to the
and he, but he was at the meeting, world, apparently, at 96.
Hopefully sooner rather than later. Jay Rockefeller is probably going to take over, and he's famous for saying he thinks it would be better that the internet never have been invented.
Now, I think point that we discussed at the beginning is this institution is fundamentally anti-democratic because of the secretive nature of the organization. And as the reporters who've tried to get out into the meetings have found out, like the Guardian's Charlie Skelton, who observed the harassment of the reporters, the way they're barred. Some people at the meeting he tried to attend in Greece in 2009, they tried to approach the hotel where the meeting was held from the sea, and they were repelled by security personnel.
Now, ironically, Charlie Skelton was sent by the Guardian to write satire because he's a comedian.
Is that right? So
he was sent to make fun of it. Because they, you know, the people like Alex Jones and Jim Tucker, they're conspiracy theorists. The Bilderberg Group is nothing but a white shoe club, as Gerald Celente calls them. And the best thing that they could have done was actually just welcome him in, Charlie Skelton, and say, you know, here, you know, this is what we're talking about. Yeah, the people are crazy. There's nothing big going on here. But instead, what happened was they repelled him. They harassed him. They followed him. And what that ended up doing was he wrote serious responses about the Bilderberg Group, and he's attended each of the 3 years since then. And that does remain to be the only press coverage that The Guardian gives it.
That's it. And virtually every other, you're not going to find
it. Which is
an
online blog. It's not even in their front page or anything.
Of course, it's so important for us to cover this on In Context, and you're listening to In Context, streaming at WPKN.org and broadcasting on WPKN at 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Thank you for listening. The secretive nature of the Bilderberg Group, it didn't come out of nowhere. This is a long tradition of secrecy. And I traced it back to Cecil Rhodes. People may know who he is. He lived from 1853 to 1902, and he was the founder of modern British imperialism. At one point, he owned the De Beers Diamond Company, which many people have heard of, and one time controlled 90% of the world's market in diamonds. He had a country named after him, Rhodesia, and he's the man who started the Boer War in order to get control of the minerals of the Transvaal from the Boers in South Africa. And he was not only immensely successful at amassing a fortune for himself in foreign countries, but he wanted to have a coherent program for really global government. He wanted to see the whole world essentially under an expanded British Empire. Remember, in the late 1800s, Britain controlled so much of the world. He actually wanted to reincorporate the United States of America back into the British Empire and take in the whole world. And in order to foster this, in 1877, in the first draft of his will, he called for the establishment of a secret society, the true aim and object of which shall be for the extension of British rule throughout the world. That's an exact quote from the first version of his will. And not too long after that, he created a group called the Round Table, with another man named Lord Alfred Milner, who was an agent of the Rothschild family. And Milner himself became an extremely influential foreign policy person. And what they did was they got scholars from Oxford and Cambridge to work with them to develop a modus in order to achieve this global rule for Britain. And over the years, the relationship between Britain and the United States has been reversed. But basically, the same concept of global government, of control of the world's mineral resources for an Anglo-American-led empire is really what's the theme that we see today. Now, the United States is the senior partner in the relationship. The British are the junior partner. You see that in the Iraq War. And now this organization that they created, the Round Table, continued after his death in 1902, and it evolved at the end of World War I into something called the Royal Institute of International Affairs, now known as Chatham House, formed in 1919 during the Versailles Conference. And one of the attendees at that group meeting were not only former roundtable people, but Paul Warburg, a name which you've probably heard in this show before, because he was a prominent German and then American banker who was the architect of the Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. So this is a very closed-in society. And at the same time, they founded, the same group of people founded another organization called the Council of Foreign Relations at the same meeting in Versailles, which of course continues today. And it was originally founded, these groups were originally founded with money from J.P. Morgan. And eventually the Rockefellers came in and financed and took control of the organization. And so you see from these seeds here that they progress forward with the same idea, secret meetings. It's really based on a Platonic notion from the Republic that the best people, i.e. the richest people, should run things. And it's okay for them to do it in secrecy. And our job as citizens is just to rubber stamp what they did. And the Trilateral Commission, which we mentioned earlier, was established in 1973 to further these goals.
Well, they feel like they're royalty, like they have the divine right of kings. And the fact that they are wealthy and elite gives them the right to rule the peons.
That's right. And there's always been this tension in democracies and republics between the people, who of course want openness and want their input into government rule, and the wealthy. And this goes back to ancient Greece, as Michael Parenti showed, when it was a theme of the Roman Republic, which was constantly being undermined by the large plantation owners. Well, it's not plantations owners anymore. Now it's bankers and the major industrialists.
Right. Well, we have a few minutes left, and I want to just quickly break down why this is significant for today, and not just the things that they've done in the past, like, you know, discuss the founding of the European Union and create the euro 10, 20 years well before it was publicly discussed and known. The information that's discussed here, all the representatives from these lower level groups like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the G8, the G20, members who attend the Bilderberg meeting get their orders from headquarters and filter them down. So the Bilderberg Group is basically a steering committee that will control the ebb and flow of policymakers like the Council on Foreign Relations, and they end up influencing places like the ADL or the Southern Poverty Law Center, the RAND Corporation, and the way the media covers it. So it's not even like this stuff happens and then you get a fair debate in the media, because the media is controlled and they know that certain things are off limits. And so the head editors at the places like the New York Times or Financial Times of London, The Guardian, you know, you're not going to get a fair shake at what you're reading, because it's only going to be you're going to get orders from the head editor not to cover the story.
The owners of the New York Times actually were financed in part by the Rothschild agents, the Rothschild family, when they took it over around the turn of the century. So they've always been part of the same group.
Right. And what was discussed this year, in particular, not just the financial collapses of Greece and Italy and Portugal, Spain, Ireland, all these countries, and the United States, they discussed whether they were going to save the euro or not, whether they were going to save the dollar or not. Whether they were going to increase the production of oil or not. And we know from their white paper writings that what they want is a deindustrialized first world. They want everybody on an even second world playing field, where everybody works all day and no one has any savings and no time for vacation or leisure time or family. They want to deconstruct the family unit, things like that. And they want to have a complete technological control grid where they can monitor everything about you, because one of the things that they're obsessed with is information and data. To be able to understand what the citizenry do and be able to predict what they like and what they want to do so that they can give them what they want. Just like Aldous Huxley wrote in Brave New World, it was all about giving people pleasantries to make them feel like there was nothing wrong, so that if they had anything wrong, they took a pill, you know, they could just advertise to them and say, buy things, I want new things, I don't want my old things. And that was the repeated slogan that was broadcast when you walk through the shopping centers.
That's right.
You know, and that's from Brave New World I'm talking about. And we know that the representatives there this year were people like Jeff Bezos of Amazon.com. There was Chris Hughes, Chris Hughes, co-founder of Facebook. We have the executive chairman and co-founder of LinkedIn. We have Craig Mundy from Microsoft. And Bill Gates, who was not on the official attendee list, did attend afterward.
And Robert Gates, the Secretary of Defense.
Robert Gates, the Secretary of Defense. Jose Luis Zapatero, who's the Spanish Prime Minister. Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor. And Anders Rasmussen, who's the current Secretary General of NATO.
Now, you had mentioned that one of the people attending was a Vice Foreign Minister for China. I think his name is Yang Fu.
Yes.
And one of the problems they're grappling with in this organization, the Bilderberg Group, has been largely, North America and Western Europe, is what they're going to do about China. Because China, obviously, is becoming the heavyweight economic in the world, fast overtaking the United States. Are they going to try? They're going to try somehow to get China to play ball with them. But do you think they're going to be successful?
Well, that's an interesting situation, because China is significant here in two reasons. One of the main areas of conversation was the internet and technology, and China has a censored internet. They have a controlled internet. So whether they were talking about how to control the ebb and flow of information, or they were talking about how to get China to play ball economically, we don't know which one they were talking about, because Keith Alexander, who is the commander of U.S. Cybercom and the director of National Security Agency, the NSA,
yes,
which is very closely linked to groups like Facebook and Google. Google is also represented.
And NSA is really more important than the CIA.
Yeah, Eric Schmidt, who is the executive chairman of Google, was at the meeting. And, you know, and also Peter Thiel, who was displayed in the Facebook movie, The Social Network. I don't know if you saw that, but Peter Thiel was one of the first big investor in Facebook. He gave them a lot of money to get rolling.
So
and he's connected to the NSA.
So
and
maybe
the CIA.
You know, that's maybe one area that they find common ground with China.
It could be the authoritarianism. Yeah, they have a lot in common.
So I don't know how we're going to. I don't know how we can. What can we do in order to bring government and control over our lives back to us?
Well, look, one thing we can do. You got to get informed. You got to know who goes to these meetings, and then don't vote for them. You know, we have senators, we have representatives, governors, candidates for president. Do not vote for anyone who has attended a Bilderberg meeting or has had a representative or surrogate attend for them. You got to boycott the corporations that are represented there, and that includes Microsoft, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google, and Coca-Cola, HSBC, Chase Manhattan Bank. The list goes on. The list is out there to find. And you got to share the information to your friends. You got to let them know who this group is, why it's important, why it affects all of us.
We got to try to get this government back. And I think one issue we've covered is the Federal Reserve. And that seems to be a central power point in this whole organization.
The idea of
replacing the Federal Reserve, a privately owned central bank, with a publicly owned bank that would lend us money for free, because it's our own money. There's no reason why we should pay for our money and be accountable directly to the people is a key step.
No, look what's happened with the bailouts. We gave them public money that they then loaned back to us at interest.
It's crazy.
They're making profit off of the money.
Why should we pay for our own money? And a second point we've talked about repeatedly is ending these global wars, because they are enriching bankers and munitions makers, and they're not doing anything for the average a person. This money should be invested in infrastructure in the United States to promote our growth and to create good-paying jobs.
Well, look at public enemy number one right now, Muammar Gaddafi. What did he do in Libya with the public bank that they have and the public oil company? He took that money, and they have a free education up through masters.
Right.
And you can get a free education. They have mass. It's a jewel of Africa right now of development.
In terms of development, I mean, democracy they don't have, but in terms of development, they're doing okay. I'm afraid we have to bring this edition of In Context to an end. The name of the show is In Context. This is Ken McDermott Rowe.
And I'm Gus Cantavero. And remember, you can find our website at incontextreport.com. See you next time.
Good night.
What is it good for?